This is the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. Go see Alan Mann and Joe Cardiff and a great gang over there at Mako Collision Repair at 2337th Avenue. I'd like to thank them for their continued support of this podcast and many other ventures in our community as they give back to the community that they work and live in. Another guy that does that, Murad El Khatib and his wife Michelle, thanks to them for their continued work in our community and supporting this podcast and the venture that I'm undertaking, which is to grow the game of football here in Saskatchewan. Our first guest out of the blocks is Jeff Stusek. Now, Jeff is an assistant coach with the U of R Rams. He was an assistant coach last year with the U18 football team. He's the head coach this year. Well, Jeff, you guys had your top 100 in Saskatoon this weekend. First off, how did that go?
That was really good, Mike. It was lots of great players in Saskatchewan, as you know, and it was great bringing the North and the South together. And we had a whole bunch of tough decisions to make to get down to our roster of 40. But fortunately, we were able to make them. We got a good squad ready to go to Canada Cup.
So we'll get to some of the names we're going to hear at the Canada Cup. But which position group was the hardest to kind of weed through?
You know what? The big guys were... We had such a big group of O-linemen that were really good. Travis Cirque, who's our O-line coach, a former longtime U of S Husky O-line coach, he said this is the best group of O-linemen as a collection that he's ever seen. So that was a tough to get that down to seven. And then our linebacking crew and our D-line crew both were really tough. But you know what? There's tough decisions in every spot. And when you get to those final few, it's a damn tough decision on imperfect information, but you got to do your best you can.
Yeah, that's tough, right? Because you only have a couple of weekends, and actually they sped the process up this year, if my my recollection is correct. So you got a short window to kind of dwindle down these guys. How do you do it in such a short time frame?
You know what? It was a weekend shorter than it typically was. You're right, and so we essentially only had the combine, the North and South camp for one day each, which is two practices. And then we had this past weekend, the top 100, which is five practices, like four in a scrimmage. So we had to work really hard, but we also draw on spring league evaluations and how they're doing in the Regina or Saskatoon spring league, or talk to former coaches. So we're trying to get the best information we can. It's not just purely what happened on Sunday afternoon between 4 and 6, but actually I try to be a body of work.
Yeah.
And just Saskatchewan always shows up. We always show up really strong in this tournament. We certainly punch above our weight. And we've seemed to make a lot of the right decisions. We breed really good football players in this province that are tough and tenacious and can take on an Ontario and Quebec toe-to-toe, even though they have 13 times the population that we do.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, you don't want to – and Jeff Stusek joining us here, the head coach of the U18 team, also an assistant coach with the U of R Rams, and we'll get to that part of your life in a second. When we're talking about the U18 team, though, you know, it's been – and I've talked to a few people that were at kind of a couple of the evaluations, and they were saying it seems like football still is a little bit stronger in the South than the North right now. I don't know if that's a cyclical thing, but we started this interview talking about O-linemen. It seems that along the lines, especially the offensive line, is where the North really is excelling. Is that a fair statement?
You know what? It is. When we started this evaluation process, I was expecting to see similar numbers like we had in the last couple of years, where 25 to 27 players of the 40 came from the South. But in the end, it's almost a perfect split, 20 and 20. Between North and South. It could be 21-19, don't quote me, but I counted only 20 players on the Regina, from Regina High Schools on the roster. So I think it's pretty even. But I think your analysis is bang on. The skill positions, quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, are predominantly South or Regina folks. But the big guys, the linebackers, the D-linemen, and the bulk of the O-linemen, are North guys. And so I'm not sure why that is. It may be cyclical. It may be training programs. I haven't really thought too much about it. The good thing is we get to bring them together and create this balance of skillful players with big brutes that can go toe-to-toe.
You know, it's interesting. I like the Spring League. We've talked about this in the podcast a few times. I like the Spring League, both in Regina. I haven't seen the Saskatoon one, Ran, but I'm sure it's going to run in the same fashion. What I like about it is Sheldon comes together with Leboldus, and Campbell comes together with Leboldus, and sure. Miller and Belfer and Winston, Nolan, Riffle, and it's just a melting pot of football players, and you get to know the other guy. That's what I like about this U18. North, south, doesn't matter. Big urban center or rural center or rural community, you come together to play for one team. I like that cool aspect of it.
You know what? The Spring League in Regina and now Saskatoon changed, I quite frankly think changed everything. That players no longer just identify themselves from what high school they go to, because, as you said, Campbell and Leboldus have had great rivalries over the past few years, but then they're teammates on a Spring League team or they're teammates on a Team Sask, and everybody, like good players, get to know each other very young through the U16 process, U18 process. By the time they get to university or junior or wherever they play football next, if they choose to, they're buddies. And it doesn't matter they went to Riffle and the other guy went to Knoll. They're buddies. And it's not how it, probably not how it, when you and I went to high school, yeah. how it was, because we didn't like you McGuigan guys, yeah. and the McGuigan guys didn't like the Escher guys, that's okay.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't know if we wore helmets either, to be honest with you.
Well, I think you were leather. I don't know if I had a mask.
That's right. Jeff Stusek joining us here, the under-18 coach and a coach with the U of R Rams. Okay, I like to highlight some of the athletes, so you got your 40 guys down. Give us some of the names that we're going to have to get accustomed to here off the top of your head, coach.
Yeah, well, I'd say very quickly, a couple of insights. Which I find interesting. There are 8 of the 40 players are from Miller High School.
Wow!
So if you want to watch a high school next year, Miller's the school to watch. So just some notables: Ethan Vibert, who is a returning player for us. He's a old tackle. He'll be our left tackle. He is just a monster of a man and has a very bright future in football. Great kid and tenacious and tough and all the things you're looking for in an old lineman. On the other side of the ball. Ramsey Derbis, who is a Holy Cross linebacker, he'll be our Will, and he played for us last year. He was a Sam for us last year, and just he practically made every single special teams tackle for us last year in the tournament. He is just he's a machine, and he's a bit bigger and stronger than he was before. There's a couple of defensive backs from Miller that are returners: Dylan Kiefer and Jackson Sombach. Michael Clow, a DN from Miller. Is going to be our rush end, and then some interesting names, some young names. Some of your listeners would be familiar with Quinn Magnuson. His son is a football player, a very good football player from Bethlehem in Saskatoon, and he's a defensive end for us. We may play him a little inside, but you know he's 6'4", 230-ish pounds, and he's in grade 10, and he's a machine, and he can long snap, and that boy has a very, very bright future ahead of him.
Wow, that is a name that we all know for sure. Let me ask you, how long have you been coaching for now, Jeff?
Oh, a long time. I coached, as soon as I left high school, I coached for 3 years. I stayed with Robert Escher Collegiate and coached for 3 years. Then I went to finish my university and school and sort of took a break. But then when my boys became of age, I kind of got cornered into coaching RMF, and I have coached since. And so I got to coach Carter when he was 10, and then Bennett when he turned 9, and then I've coached since. So I don't know how many seasons that adds up to. It's certainly like 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
But through several programs, I coached RMF for 6 years, and then I coached U17 and South South Select, and I was the head coach of U16 for 3 years, and the OC for three years, and then I coached U18 last 2 years, and U17, and now with the Rams. This is in my second year, so I coach a fair amount.
What's your favorite part of it?
You know, there's actually only one answer of this, which is I love the development of turning what I would say young boys into young, productive men that I'm going to see them 10 years from now, and I know football was the reason that they have the discipline, the stick-to-itiveness, the awareness, the ability to work with teams. As an employer, I'm the CEO of a fairly big company, and we look for people that can play along with each other, like can be teammates and understand that. So football is a great environment, a breeding ground. It teaches discipline. It teaches roles. It teaches sometimes you're in the spotlight and sometimes you're supporting the guy in a spotlight. And I don't know if I've come across a football player that I've coached. It's not because of me. It's because there's fantastic coaches out there that wouldn't be – that they're forever positively changed because of their football experience. And as a parent who's had two sons transform from young men into young men, productive men, a lot of that's football, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, you can't say it any better. Okay, so a couple more questions to wrap up.
Sure.
So you talked about that's always been a part of football. When you and I played, the guys that really cared about football, that was always been a part of football, the discipline and everything you just said there. But how has the football player changed since you've been in the game? Like, you know, you've watched these guys and how you've, you know, you coached them a different way back in Robert Usher till now. So how has the football player changed?
You know, it's interesting you asked that question. I did a presentation to the coaches clinic in Saskatoon about a month ago, and I had a bit of a controversial topic, which is coaching millennials and how the coach needs to change, because we as coaches are old schoolers and we say things like, team above self, and you just got to forget your personal goals and set it aside because we're all striving towards some team goal. And millennials aren't wired that way. They weren't raised that way. They're part of the solution. And so I use the example of my boys have been part of our family's planning, whether it's family vacations, they sit with us and help plan it, whether it's family finances and important decisions, our boys have been included in that. So how do you can't just strip that away on the football field. So football coaches need to find balance, because millennials are here and we have no other players to coach other than millennials. We'd love to coach a baby boomer who is super respectful of authority, but these dudes are on their phone. These dudes are connected to music that you and I don't like, and that you got to relate. And that's my goal, because it's, as soon as you get good at that, it's your competitive advantage. So if you can talk about the Migos or, I don't know, Drake, as easily as you can talk about the music that I like, let's say the Tragically Hip, my dudes don't want to hear about the Tragically Hip, but if I can tell them the latest Drake song, they kind of like that. But it's just a way to reach them, and you got to find ways to reach them, and that's what we do as coaches and as parents.
And how tough has that been for you?
You know what? You die in business if you don't adapt. So if you're not able to adapt to your new employees or your new customers and say there's only one way to do this and it's my way, you're going to die in business. And we've been able to survive. I haven't found it hard. You got to find what's important, stick to your values, but at the same time, you've got to be flexible, because this is a different generation and it's not a bad generation. That's the other thing that us old, I won't put you in my.
Well, I'm right there. You know what I find?
They're not far away.
I find interesting about the way you're talking, because you're talking like a coach, but you're talking like a CEO. So even a coach is kind of like a CEO, isn't he?
100%. That's why I learn more as much on the football field that I apply in the boardroom, and vice versa. And so I'm fortunate enough. I get to, I'm on the Ryder board of directors, so I get to merge the two worlds together, which is fantastic. And had experience at the CFL board of governors too. Get to merge this sort of football world with this business world. But honestly, on the field, trying to motivate Ryan Schienbein or Kyle Morkat for us as a receiver, it's not a lot different than my controller or CFO. They have personal needs and desires and motivations, and I got to tap into that. And it's all good. So
you mentioned Schienbein there, Jeff. Let's talk about the Rams. Put your Rams hat on. Is he the guy that's replacing Picton this year? Mitch Picton, that is. How do you replace Picton?
It's hard. Mitch was a guy, and big guy, and I expect him to do very well with the Riders, and he's a big target, and he did everything we asked him to do. Schienbein is Ryan is he's a different body type, different skill set, and he's shorter, but he's quicker, and he has great hands, and he wins a lot of 50-50 balls, too. So he and Kyle Morkat will shoulder a lot. But we have some young players that have really blossomed over their last year. Lucas Nurkowski was a Riffle grad from 2 years back. He's tremendous. We were able to grab Chris Calcutt from the junior team. Mm-hmm. I coached Chris Campbell. He's a great force. Cass Ochai is a former Thunder player. We got Sam Mike out of the Hilltops, a couple of players out of junior, Shamar Donaldson out of BC Junior, and a fellow by the name of Kyler Mosley that you should get to know. He's a great BC junior player. So what's nice is we're recruiting not just for skill set now for the Rams, but we're also recruiting character dudes that that sort of commit to the program. And so we've really turned that corner, I think. We're not just begging for the next 6'2" guy that could jump, but someone that's going to fit our program. And Coach Bryce has really instilled that, and it's aligned with McConkey's theories. And we're in a good spot. And I really wish Noah well on his trip, but I damn well, I hope he comes back. And same with Atlee, that those are two really important cogs for us. But it's football. If they go find success and make those teams, I'm ecstatic for them, and we'll respond. Kyle Borson will have to step up.
Sure happy that Noah did get a chance, and you couldn't land in a better spot than Tressman, Calvillo, and Ricky Ray.
Yeah. I just got off the phone. I was texting with Noah this afternoon, and I said, "What's the difference?" He said, "Ricky Ray's a machine, and he does every little detail matters." And he said, "That's the separation." And I thought, well, if anyone will pick that up, it's Noah, and Noah will bring that back with him, or hopefully stay and just be a super contributor, because no one deserves it more than he does.
One last thing for you in terms of, before we get to you and your son's connection there on the Rams, Atlee Simon with the Calgary Stampeders. A lot of talk is he going into camp, there's a good chance he could stick. But if he doesn't stick and he comes back to your team, have you guys thought about internally about getting him and Kyle Borsa on the field at the same time? Kyle Borsa is a very fast guy. We know he runs track, and I know he's a young guy, but he's a dynamic football player. Do you ever think about maybe putting one of those guys in the slot or doing something where you could get both of them on the field?
The short answer is yes, because they're both super athletes. Atlee is a very gifted receiver, and we worked him at receiver all through the winter, and he actually ran receiver stuff at the combine as well as running back stuff, and wanted some options open. I think Calgary's interested in him as a running back, which is great. But he could very easily be a slot back, that we've seen in the league. So we've got to get Atlee on the field, and we've got to get Kyle on the field. So Mark has lots of plans around whether it's two running backs or moving one of them to receiver for times or sets. We've got to be dynamic in that for sure.
Okay, lastly, Jeff Stusek is the coach of the Rams receivers. His son, Bennett, outstanding football player with Campbell, wins the provincial championship. He's now with the Rams. I know you've coached your son in the past. Is it tough to take off the dad hat and put on the coach's hat?
Fortunately, I've coached Bennett almost every single team he's been on since he was 9. And so he is a coach. He's going to be a coach someday. He's a coach on the field. I call him bossy, but he actually is very instructive to other players around what they got to do and why they got to do it. I have never once had an issue between dad-coach relationship, and when he was getting recruited, it just added a level of complexity because the kid was recruited all over the country and had offers, and we wanted him too. And so I had to say, okay, I've got my Rams hat on here. We really want you. I take that off, put my dad hat on, and say, you got to go where it's best for you. And he worked through his decision, and Cheryl was there to help him too, and as was I, and I'm a dad first. And fortunately for us and for the family, I think, all together, that he decided to stay in Regina for the program and football program, but also the business program. So he made the best choice for him, and I'm happy that we're not going to face him. My biggest fear was he was going to have a red and yellow jersey on, and we're going to face him twice a year out of Calgary. So I'm happy he's in the green and gold.
Yeah, as a voice of the Rams, we're happy he's here too. Hey, we're going to be watching you guys July, I believe, 13th to the 21st in Calgary at McMahon Stadium. It's the Canada Cup. We look forward to Saskatchewan being around the final again. It's been 2 years in a row. I think you guys lost in the final, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right about that? I think so.
Yeah, well, last 2 years we lost in the final. Last year we were up in the gold medal game against Quebec and gave up a 41-yard Hail Mary with 19 seconds left to lose. So it's heartbreaking, but like I said, Saskatchewan punches above its weight, and we give Quebec and Ontario all that they can handle. And it's going to be another tough tournament. We open against Manitoba, and Manitoba wants nothing more than to knock us off our perch. So we've got three tough games ahead of us for sure.
Jeff, thanks for this.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair at 2330 7th Avenue here in Regina. All right, we're joined by Mark McLaughlin. If you're a CFL fan, you remember that name. When he retired, he was the second all-time leading scorer in Canadian Football League history, former kicker for the Stampeders, and had a cup of coffee with the BC Lions. But he finds himself now in provincial politics in Saskatchewan as he's the deputy minister for advanced education. Mark, how are you?
Good, Michael. Yourself?
Doing well, man. So tell us, how did you find your way into the political game in our fair province?
Well, you know, it's an interesting story. You know, my journey in business outside of football for probably the last couple of decades have involved a lot of sort of government relation activity, both in the corporate sector and in the private sector with post-secondary institutions. And this opportunity came to my attention last fall, and I thought it was a great opportunity. I thought it was a unique opportunity. Excited about Saskatchewan and what we're doing in regards to the political landscape around post-secondary education, and took a shot at it, and everything worked out well. So I've been here since September. It's a great opportunity for my family to be here and truly enjoying our time in Regina.
Are you eager to see Rider Nation from the other side now?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm surrounded by it on a daily basis. It's really hard to get away from. I love the passion. You know, it's been tough to put some green on, but I have actually ventured down that road and went to a game last year with a Riders jersey on. Kind of tried to be a little bit incognito, but I did get caught. There's a lot of Calgary fans because it was a game against Calgary.
Yeah.
But it was a fun experience. I think it's a great, certainly a great culture here for CFL. The stadium is beyond fantastic. And, you know, these fans here in this province deserve something like that. So great to be a part of.
How tough was it to play here when you were in your playing days with the Stamps?
Well, you know, at the old Taylor Field, it was a challenge. Certainly you had the weather to deal with. It was always, I don't think we ever played a game that wasn't windy. You know, we had a lot of success, but I'm not rubbing that in. That's just the fact we did have a lot of success during that period. But the one thing that I really did enjoy is that you always had a full stadium. The fans were very passionate. Were into the game. They know the game. They've got a lot of love for the sport. And quite frankly, you know, when I came into the league in the late '80s, and the league was sort of brinkering on existence, if it wasn't for the fans of Saskatchewan and the communities like what you have here in Saskatchewan, I don't know if the CFL would have survived. So, you know, a lot of credit does go to what these fans bring to the table in respect to their knowledge and support of that institution.
Mark McLaughlin joining us here. Very pleased to be talking to him. We'll talk to him about what he's doing in the football world in a second because it hits close to home. But I wanted to talk about, you know, you talked about in the 80s it was kind of tinkering. This league has always seemed to have had one foot on the ledge, so to speak, where you're – I always – when I grow growing up watching this sport, Mark, I always cheered for the Riders. And then the team that was going to fold, because I didn't want them to fold. I wanted them to do well, so I wanted their fans to come out. In the 90s, we had to get some American expansion. That's one of the games that's going to be in the CFL history. Your Calgary Stampeders, the Baltimore Stallions here in Regina, a very windy day in the Grey Cup here in the 1995 Grey Cup. Let me ask you, you kicked the game-winning field goal in 98 in Winnipeg. Does the loss, do the losses stay with you longer than the thrill of victory?
They do actually, and in fact I do think a lot about that game in 95, and you talk a little bit about the weather. You know, the day before that game, the weather was fantastic. It was a beautiful day in late November, and then game day was a bit of a disaster, and you know, we just we didn't have the manpower to keep up with the Baltimore team, and to lose a Grey Cup, you know, obviously a Canadian tradition to a U.S. franchise was difficult, but you know, I lived through all of that expansion, saw the good in it, saw the bad in it, and had a lot of losses. Even though we had a lot of success during my tenure of winning three Grey Cups, we did lose three, and you know, we lost a lot of Western Finals as well. And it is the losses actually that do stick with you, that you wish you could, you know, have back, because it's difficult to get to those big games. And unless you have a very long career, sometimes it becomes fleeting and they're gone and you'll never get them back. So those ones were tough. The 95 one was tough, especially playing it out here in Regina when you've got, you know, a great fan base and great support. You know, the Western Final in 93, when Calgary was hosting the Grey Cup that year, to lose that game was very tough. And then, you know, going back and obviously looking at 92, when we won in Toronto, what we lost in 91 in Winnipeg. 91 was okay to accept because, you know, we had turned the corner as a franchise and we were moving up. And just to get there, I think, you know, was a great accomplishment for us, and we were able to really build off of that. But, yeah, I'd say of all the losses, the one in 95 probably stings the most.
Mark, you know, we talk about, to start this interview, the fact you're in politics and the Deputy Minister of Advanced Education. It's kind of a nice tie-in because if I remember correctly, you were pretty involved with schools and that type of stuff off the field in Calgary, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I've actually been involved in education or educational programs since the early 90s. And I ran a program for all of Southern Alberta called the Stay in School Program, which was at that time a federal government initiative, and we were able to generate a lot of corporate support, put together a speakers bureau, made, you know, umpteen thousand visits to schools and classrooms talking about the importance of education and goal setting. And then we were able to take the program and expand it nationally and get the CFL head office involved and get a program initiated in every CFL city, which I think for the most part, you know, still exists to some extent, maybe in a different form or different variation, but the importance of outreach into communities and supporting communities and supporting our youth still exists with our franchises. So, you know, that part I take a lot of pride in, and I've always had an interest and a passion of working with young people and working within the education sector.
You stepped away from football, became the president of the Calgary Stampeders. That lasted just over 50 days. What was behind that? Do you regret maybe not staying in the front office longer? Because I know you came back to play.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting, actually, part of my career because there was never an intention to stay in that position long term. It was done for a particular reason, and that was to enable some change at the ownership level and try to get some stability and structure back into the front office. We had started to lose that stability with the ownership that came in from the U.S. In Michael Federick, and him bringing in his own people really to protect the opportunity for his son Kevin to play quarterback. And a lot of changes were made. A lot of people were sort of pushed out, and we lost the ability to take control of that. And you know, I was in a unique position. Where, you know, I played at that time 16 years in Calgary. I had a lot of connections in the corporate sector, in the sporting sector. I was sort of well-versed in the operations and management of the franchise, and felt that I could, you know, make some change, make some quick change. And, you know, those 50 days, we were able to get some people out, you know, move the chairs on the deck a little bit, if I can use that analogy, and at least get it to the point of dialogue opening up with the Calgary Flames around new ownership, which ultimately did end up happening. So, you know, we were on the front end of that. I was on the front end of that. You know, certainly we could have done things a little bit differently, but at the end of the day, you know, the club ended up where it needed to be, and that was in good hands with the right ownership for the right reasons, investing in the right people, And success continued forward. So for that, I was excited about.
As the voice of the Rams, I was really excited to see that you were added to the coaching staff as the kicking coach, helping out with their kickers, and they got this kid from Mexico who can really kick the football. I always like to ask guys, when I'm talking to guys like you, legends like you, what would Mark McLaughlin now tell young Mark McLaughlin if you could write some advice for him? But I guess you get to do that now as a coach. So what's the one thing, what's the main thing you'll impart on a young kicker kicking for the Rams?
Well, you know, the one thing that I think you learn as you grow as an athlete, and particularly as a kicker, if you're fortunate enough to have a long career, on the tail end, you always understand that less is better. And, you know, the more, you know, kicking is an individual sort of traits that you develop both physically and mentally, and at certain parts it's the mental component of it that is actually much more important than the physical part of it. Honing things physically, you know, it actually doesn't take a lot if you have the ability to kick and you have the mechanics and processes to do that, but it's the mental part of it. So what I'm really looking forward to now is working with the kickers, you know, both on the field, game day, and as well in their preparation a lot being mentally. Kickers today are coming into the league or into even universities with a lot of sort of physical ability, more so than, you know, when I went to school or when I started my career. Kids today are, you know, they're strong, they're big, they've got big legs, they got a lot of power. And so, you know, it doesn't take a lot to sort of hone that, and a lot of the focus will be on what we do mentally with them and getting them prepared through visualization and other things, which really helped me, you know, in my career. And there's obviously new techniques around training now that kids can do that, you know, don't put a lot of stress on your body, but allow, you know, the proper muscles to be developed to enhance, you know, your form of kicking. So I'm excited about it. I had the opportunity to meet the coaches, meet Coach Bryce, fantastic individual, and looking forward to contributing what I can in an area that I think they've identified as a need for them going forward.
Oh, yeah, for sure, absolutely. And they can't do much better than getting Mark McLaughlin in to help out. I tell you what, it kind of speaks lastly to your background. You're in a community now, and you really get immersed in that community and give back, so that's good.
Absolutely, and that was the one thing that I, you know, I looked at this opportunity now that I'm doing with the government and being in Regina, and it was a major focus of mine to say, okay, how can I give back to the community? How can I get more involved? And what are some of the opportunities? And this was presented to me, and I couldn't be more thrilled, more happy about it, and more excited about it.
Well, I didn't cheer for you back in the day, my friend, but we're happy to have you in our community now, and you're helping out one of my favorite football teams, so I appreciate you stopping by.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, and I'm sure we'll cross paths during the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be extolling your virtues, hopefully, when you turn around that kicking game. Thanks for this.
Cool. Thanks, Baldy. Bye.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair, located at 2330 7th Avenue. Before I sign off here, just want to remind you that our Rough Rider broadcast across the 620 CKRM Rough Rider Radio Network fire up on Sunday. We'll be on the air 3 hours prior to kickoff with our pregame show, as I'll be joined this year once again by panelists Paul Waldo, Chris Best, Mike McCullough, Luke Mullender. We're looking to add Chris Getzlaff from time to time as well. And we have added Darian Durant with the doubles take and Nick Lewis with his moving the chains feature. So it should be a fun and interesting season of broadcasting Rough Rider football. If you have a story you'd like me to pursue here on the Growing the Game podcast, email me mball@harvardbroadcasting.com, and I'd love to get your story on this podcast as we try to grow the game. And a reminder, share this podcast with your friends, your family, and your football contacts so we can keep this the game of football flourishing in this province. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon.